Today's scripture is taken from the book of John, chapter 10, verses 1 through 21. It's found on page 896 of the Pew Bibles. The book of John, chapter 10, starting from verse 1. Truly, truly, I say to you, he who does not enter the sheepfold by the door, but climbs in by another way, that man is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the gatekeeper opens. The sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he has brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. A stranger they will not follow, but they will flee from him, for they do not know the voice of strangers. This figure of speech Jesus used with them, but they did not understand what he was saying to them. So Jesus again said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, I am the door of the sheep. All who came before me are thieves and robbers. But the sheep did not listen to them. I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved and will go in and out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. He who is a hired hand and not a shepherd, who does not own the sheep, sees the wolf coming and leaves the sheep and flees. And the wolf snatches them and scatters them. He flees because he is a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. And I have other sheep that are not of this fold. I must bring them also, and they will listen to my voice. So there will be one flock, one shepherd. For this reason the Father loves me, because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. This charge I received from my Father." There was again a division among the Jews because of these words. Many of them said, "He has a demon and is insane. Why listen to him?" Others said, "These are not the words of one who is oppressed by a demon. Can a demon open the eyes of the blind?" This is the word of the Lord.
Let's pray together. Father, may it be now that the only voice we hear is the voice of you speaking through your Son by your Spirit. Lead us to the life abundant that Jesus came to give us. Amen. Well, this Sunday we are continuing our series on Jesus' I Am statements. These are the statements that we find in the Gospel of John, where Jesus says things like, "I am," as we heard, the good shepherd, "I am the bread of life," "I am the resurrection," and there are several others. As I said last week, the I Am statements of Jesus, they're like the gospel in one sentence. They teach us something essential that we need to know about God, but they also teach us something essential we need to know about ourselves, about our condition, about our need. They're the gospel, just jam-packed into one statement. And these statements, I said, these are these moments in Jesus' ministry where he's just trying to get their attention. He's trying even to get our attention even now. And he's saying to us, if you want to know the truth about God, if you want to know who God it really is, he's saying you have to come to him. You have to come to him. And if you want to know the truth about yourself, if you want to know the truth about the meaning of life, about ultimate reality, he's saying you have to come to him. You have to come to him. And in this week's I Am statement, where Jesus says, I am the good shepherd, this is a statement that is exploding with metaphysical and existential significance. What do I mean? Well, in one sense, this is a statement that cuts right to the heart of what is central to the entire Bible. There is only one person that is competent to rule lives, to rule over lives. And Jesus comes right out in this passage and says it. It's me. It's me. I am the only one who is competent to rule over lives. But the statement, it also has something, it says something that speaks right to the heart of something we all long for. Something we all long for, yet at the same time we are deeply skeptical of. And it's this idea of being led, right? It is this idea of having someone rule over us. Someone to show us the way that we aren't competent in ourselves to kind of rule over our lives. That we need someone to do that. In one sense, we long for that. We know we need that. But in another sense, we are deeply skeptical of it. Think about it. From the time we're children, we are looking to people to show us the way. People to shepherd us, from our parents, our grandparents, aunts, uncles, our older siblings. As children, we are entirely dependent upon them to show us the way. And then as we mature into school, we begin to look to our teachers, our instructors, our coaches, and then on into college and into adulthood, we look to philosophies, ideas, professors, bosses, political leaders, financial advisors, counselors, even our pastors. There's something about us. We were designed to be led. And yet at the same time, we also find ourselves being deeply, deeply skeptical towards those who lead. Cynical of those with power and authority. As Lord Acton says, absolute power corrupts absolutely. And we know this. We know this. Be it our politicians with their lying and their manipulating and their posturing to promote and preserve not the common good, but their own self-interest. Or CEOs and business leaders who twist the system and ruin lives to turn a profit for themselves, or even religious leaders who have used organized religion for their own personal gain. In our passage, Jesus capitalizes on using this language of shepherding because he knows that despite our skepticism, we not only long to be shepherded, we need to be shepherded. And the challenge our passage puts before us is this. There are countless shepherds in the world. There are countless leaders in the world, self-appointed gurus that are promising to give you life. But only one can give you true life, abundant life. Do you know him? Are you following him? Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I am the only one who can lead you into the life you were meant to have. Here in John 10, he shows us that to get that life, you need to know four things. You need to know that bad shepherds exist. Bad shepherds exist. Two, you need to know the voice of the good shepherd when you hear it. Three, you need to follow him when he calls. Four, you need to receive from him what he gives. So first, you need to know that bad shepherds exist. Now, our passage actually begins in the middle of a conflict. In a conflict. It goes back to the previous chapter, to the beginning of chapter 9. If you go back to chapter 9, what you see there is that Jesus has healed this man that was born blind. He has healed this man. He's never been able to see, and all of a sudden, he can see everything. And the religious leaders of the day hate this. The religious authorities during Jesus' time, they see this man who's received sight, they're skeptical of it actually, and they hate it. And they hate it because this healing that Jesus has done doesn't fit into their religious categories. Jesus doesn't fit into their religious categories. And so as a symbol of their authority and power and to show Jesus that they mean business, they cast this man out. This man that was healed by Jesus, they excommunicate him from the religious community. And what we're seeing here in our passage in John 10 is Jesus launching this severe critique against these religious leaders. And what is he calling him? What is he calling these religious leaders? False shepherds. This is what John 10 is trying to show us, the contrast between false shepherds and the good shepherd. What we see is, in three ways, we see how Jesus thinks of these three shepherds. So first, notice verses 1 and 8. Verses 1 and verse 8. Jesus calls them thieves and robbers. Thieves and robbers. The commentator, Dale Bruner, I love how he translates this. He says, they are ripoff artists. They're posers. These are leaders that are stealing honor for themselves, and they're robbing safety from those they should be looking after. They have one agenda, and it's to get what they want at the cost of others' lives. Notice verse 10, it uses even more striking language. Jesus says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. This is the language of vandalism. It's the language of abuse. This is the language of destruction. In other words, these are shepherds who want to have access to the most precious parts of your life, but they only do damage. They only do damage. And then secondly, in verse 5, Jesus calls them strangers. These shepherds are strangers. My wife and I have had this ongoing conversation with our son, Woods, about how we are called to love our neighbors as Jesus has taught us. And the children's catechism we use asks this very simple question. It asks, who is your neighbor? Who is your neighbor? You know what the answer is? Everyone. Everyone is your neighbor. And it's a great answer. And so naturally, Woods treats everyone as his neighbor and his friend. Everyone is his friend now. But sadly, recently we've had to tell him, buddy, not everyone is a good neighbor. There are also strangers. There are bad people out there who you can't trust that actually might want to hurt you. And that is Jesus' point. Not everyone who comes to you is coming with good intentions. These shepherds are strangers. And then thirdly, in verse 12, he calls them hired hands. Now, there's nothing inherently evil with this description, but its point is to show you someone whose interest is in wages, not in sheep. It speaks of a person whose interest is in what he gets, not what he can give. Which is why Jesus says, when wolves come, what do these hired hands do? They flee. They run away. They care more about their welfare than the welfare of the sheep. So these false shepherds, Jesus says they are thieves and robbers, they are strangers, and they are hired hands. Now here's the thing with all of these, and this is where the challenge comes to us. All of these false shepherds initially come across as appearing to be good. Right? This is what makes them so deceptive. This is what makes them so dangerous. Jesus says elsewhere that they are whitewashed tombs. They look clean, but they are death. Now, in our passage, Jesus is talking about religious leaders. And it's necessary for me and even somewhat strange to be up here and tell you this, but there are false teachers in the church. I mean, that's the point of what he's saying here. There are false teachers in the church of Christ. By the grace of God, they're not in this church, only by the grace of God, but they are in churches, churches in this area, churches you may know. And let's acknowledge this, that is scary. It's a very scary thing, and it's very real. But false shepherds could also be anyone in leadership. Be it business, be it health, be it politics, you name it. Anyone who promises you something edging on ultimate life and significance. What is their guarantee that they can deliver? They can't. There isn't one. There is no guarantee that they can deliver on ultimate significance, ultimate meaning, and ultimate life. That is what makes them false shepherds. And anyone who seeks to offer you something like that, listen, whatever field they are in, that's a false shepherd. They're just selling you something. And listen, these are everywhere. Gurus promising, if you just have this. Experts saying, if you only had that. Anything that is packaged to sell you, listen, sell you abundant life, is coming from a false shepherd. I'm okay with saying that. And I know that might get into some corners of your life that you're thinking, no, I invest in certain things that are helping my life. It can't give you abundant life. It can't give you the life that you were created for. And to the degree that you think it does, well, that's to the degree that you're actually listening to a false shepherd, Jesus is saying. The question becomes then, how do you know a true shepherd from a false one? How do you keep from falling prey to these false shepherds? We have to know the voice of the good shepherd. So second, the voice of the good shepherd. You have to know the voice of the good shepherd. The problem to this whole critique on these, the background to the whole, this whole critique on these false shepherds is that there are sheep, right, that they're preying upon. And the main way sheep keep from being led away by false shepherds is that they must know the voice of their shepherd. Common practice for all shepherds is that they have to train their sheep to be attuned to only one voice, their voice, one voice. One example of how this works is how shepherds often will they'll drive their herds together with other shepherds. When shepherds go on long driving herds, they would often herd their flocks with other shepherds. So you'd have multiple shepherds, each with their own flock, driving together. And in the evenings, when they would stop to eat and sleep, what they would do on these long drives, they would gather all their flocks into one large flock. And they would all spend the night together for maximal protection. They would bring everyone together for maximal protection. And they would either have a makeshift shelter that they were bringing along with them, or maybe they would have find a cave or an area that had natural protection, like a hill or a cove. But what they did was they brought all the flocks together so they'd have maximal protection. And on the next day, when they would get ready to continue their drive, they would have to separate these hundreds of sheep, right, to back into their individual flocks. And the way they did this was the shepherds would just spread out. They would just leave the big flock and they would just spread out in the region. And what would they do? They would begin to make their own distinct calls. Some might have this kind of flute-like instrument and they'd begin to blow on it. Others might just use their voice. Others would use very distinct sounds coming out of their mouth. But sure enough, as the shepherds began to make their unique calls, you'd see these sheep start moving to their shepherd. And they would begin to separate. And it's in this way that the shepherds would gather their flocks and lead them out. The sheep knew the voice of their shepherd. And the reason Jesus uses this language here in John 10 is because we are all like sheep, right? Three times he talks about the importance of sheep knowing the voice of the good shepherd. Verse 4, the sheep know his voice. Verse 5, they do not know the voice of a stranger. Verse 8, the sheep did not listen to them. Verse 16, they listen to my voice. Jesus uses this language because he's saying that you are not capable. You are not capable to take care of yourself, and you need a voice over you. You need a voice that you can trust. I mean, just think about how utterly dependent sheep are on their shepherds. For pasture, for food, for shelter, for provision, for health, for cleaning, their entire well-being is in the shepherd's hands. If that shepherd neglects them, they suffer. They suffer. And we are all like sheep in this way. One way we are like sheep is that we are lost and helpless, right? We are lost and helpless without a shepherd. In the ancient world, you would never see wild sheep running around. Do you know why? Because they would be dead. They would be eaten alive. The moment they got away, they were eaten alive, or they would get into some poisonous roots, or they would starve to death. Without a shepherd, they would make a mess of themselves and their lives. And the truth is, so do we. So do we. Just think about your own heart for a moment. Within all of us, there are these foolish tendencies that only tend towards self-destruction. Proverbs 14 and 16 says, there is a way that seems right to man, but its end is death. There's a way that seems right to you, and should not the shepherd interfere, it would only lead to death. And sure, you may be doing well in one area of your life, but there is another area that you are completely blind to. We never hit on all cylinders. So for example, you may be doing very well in your career. You may be bringing in the money. You may be providing for your family. But your relationships are a mess. You have no self-awareness. You offend everyone. Or maybe you have great relationships. Maybe you're an incredible people person. You have great relationships, but you have no self-control. You have no discipline over your life. Or maybe you have a polished public life. Everyone looks up to you, believes in you, thinks well of you, but privately, you are on the verge of a meltdown. You go into your room, and you just want to cry. You're miserable when you're alone. All of us, if we are honest, we are in desperate need of a shepherd. But second, though, we are actually worse than sheep. We are prone to follow false shepherds. Jesus says sheep don't follow the voice of strangers, but we do. We do. Some of us have been looking for a shepherd all our lives. It could be in a person. It could be in an institution. We look to financial gurus, health gurus, naturopaths, self-help gurus, politics, a relationship, all of these. We look to them to shepherd us, to bring us abundant life. But they never do. They never do. They promise something they can never deliver. And listen, none of these are actually bad in themselves. But they aren't true shepherds. They aren't what you really need. They aren't they aren't the thing that will actually give you the ultimate life you are longing for. And then some of us have given up and we have grown cynical altogether towards needing to be shepherded. But that just leaves us to be our own shepherds. And think about it. What makes you think you are competent to rule over your life, to be the one who can run your life? What evidence is there that you are the most competent person to rule over your life? There is none. There is none. What you and I need, what everyone needs, is to hear above all the voices in our lives a voice that we can absolutely trust. The voice of a true shepherd. And not just the voice of a shepherd, but the voice of the true shepherd. And Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I am the only one who is competent enough, credentialed enough, one who cares enough to shepherd your soul and even to shepherd your destiny. But the challenge is, you can only know he is the true shepherd. Listen, you can only know he is the true shepherd if you follow him when he calls. If you actually follow him when he calls. Have you heard his voice? Do you know his voice? Do you know what his call sounds like? His sheep know his voice. Do you know it? Do you know it? So thirdly, you have to follow him when he calls. Twice in this passage, Jesus mentions calling his sheep. And he assumes, like any shepherd would, that his voice will be recognized. His voice will be recognized. His sheep will hear his voice and they will respond. In other words, Jesus is saying, if you belong to me, you will follow me when I call to you. But notice how intimate and specific the call is that Jesus makes. Notice what he says in verse 3. It says, he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. When he brought out all his own, he goes before them and the sheep follow him. And then in verse 14, he intensifies this with his emphasis on intimate knowledge. He says, I am the good shepherd. I know my own and my own know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. Now think about the significance of being called by your name. This came home to me when I was in D.C. and I was meeting with so many people on Capitol Hill, and I forgot everyone's name. I would meet them, and 10 minutes later, I forgot their name. There were so many people I was meeting, and so I had to begin keeping a little notebook of names and kind of just notes on, freckles, brown hair, blah, 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 whatever, a name, this office name, because I'm terrible with names, and I apologize if you have suffered that from me here, and I have totally either forgotten your name or called you by the wrong name. I'm sure I have. I know I have to one of you. But when someone remembers your name, greets you by your name, introduces you to someone by your name, it just feels good, right? It just feels right. It's affirming when people remember your name. Having your name remembered, known, even being addressed by your name, it's one of the most affirming things that can be done to you and that you can do for someone else. But for shepherds, naming their sheep, this is so much more intimate than just a name like Casey or Susan or Bob. No, for shepherds, the names they give their sheep were more like pet names. That may not sound intimate, but it's like he's looking around his flock and he's asking, where's Long Ears? Where's Spot? Where's Shaggy? Where's Limp? You see, it's naming that is specific to something about the sheep, to the details of the sheep. It's naming that shows that he pays attention, that he knows, that he keeps a record of everything about the sheep, what has happened to the sheep. It is specific to the sheep. It's not a generic name. It's a pet name. It's what we do with our spouses. We have very specific, special names, right? So in other words, what Jesus is saying is, when I call you, I know your story. I know what I'm calling you from. I know what you've been through. I know the horrors you have experienced. I know the scars they have left upon you. I know what you're going through. I know how foolish you've been. I know how ashamed you are. I know when you're the most afraid. I know what excites you. I know what continues to haunt you. He's calling out to you, and if when he calls, he has all of this into account, every single one of it. And it's mysterious, but you know when you hear his call, it's a call that goes right to the place of your heart that needs to go to call you out of that place you need to come out of to. That is what Jesus is doing when he calls you by name. It is specific, it is personal, because he wants to tend to you. He wants to tend to you. He is a shepherd. He wants to care for you and the specific ways you need to be shepherded. Now, on the one hand, this is a tremendous comfort to us. Think about it, that God himself knows and cares about your likes, about your dislikes, about your needs, about your weaknesses, your quirks, your wounds, your past that you never talk about. There's not a nook or cranny of your life that he does not know exhaustively, that he even knows our deepest sins, our darkest secrets, and he wants to tend to us. He wants to know us. But this is also unsettling to us. While on the one hand, we desire to be known, on the other hand, we fear it. Some of you are saying, I desperately want to be known. I desperately want to live in community. I want people to know me. But once someone moves towards you, you clam up. You withdraw. Or you wear a mask. Or you have that nervous chatter, whatever it is, you hide. Why? Because you are afraid that if you are fully known, you will be rejected. You will not be loved. I mean, think of physical examinations, the physical nakedness that we all have to go through in physical examinations. Few of us can withstand the scrutiny of a physical examination, right? We go in there and we're kind of all weird and just awkward around this doctor who's about to give us the physical examination. But really, none of us can withstand the scrutiny of a spiritual and emotional examination. For someone to go there, to go to those places that we ourselves won't even go, to go there and to open it up and to speak into it, to call out of it, to know exactly what is going on there and to put you in your place, but not to put you in your place that you might be undone, but to put you in your place that you might find life. That is the knowledge. That is the call. But what if you could be fully known and wholly loved? Not wholly affirmed, that wouldn't be loving, but wholly loved. That is the kind of knowledge Jesus has of his sheep. It is penetrating, it is exhaustive, it is accurate. He knows you all the way to the bottom, and he does not abandon you. What shepherd do you have in your life that knows you that way, that you are entrusting yourself to that way. There's no one. There's no one but Jesus. He is the only one that can know you that way. You maybe are trying to give someone that access, but they can't handle it. They will abuse it. They'll take advantage of it. They will damage it. They'll exploit it. But really, they can't handle that. No one is meant to handle that much weight except Jesus alone. But not only does he name us and call us, but he leads us and he guards us. First, he leads us. Look at verse 3 and 4. It says, Jesus leads them out, and when he's brought out all his own, he goes before them, and the sheep follow him. And then in verse 9, I am the door. If anyone enters by me, he will be saved, and he will go in and out and find pasture. Notice what Jesus is saying here. He will lead them out. They will be brought out. They will go in and out. These phrases here, to go in and out, these are Hebrew idioms that mean something like to be led into freedom. To be led into freedom. It's why Jesus says they will find pasture. He will lead them into pasture. Jesus is saying this, my leadership of you, my shepherding of you is one that aims to lead you not into this restricting, kind of constraining, anti-you authentic life, but it's a life that is meant to lead you into true freedom, where there is true flourishing. And notice, it's not freedom that is found staying within the confines of a sheep pen, but it's a freedom that is found staying close to the shepherd. Do you hear that? It's not a freedom that just leads you into a sheep pen, but it's that keeps you there, but it's a freedom that keeps you close to the shepherd. In other words, it is life in Jesus that is true freedom. The closer you are to him, the freer you become. Do you realize that? You are not losing your freedom the closer you get to them. You are gaining your freedom. You're gaining freedom that you long for. But not only are you freer, but you become safer. Jesus also guards us. Notice that Jesus actually uses another I am statement. I am the door. This is an odd image, and it's a change in metaphor, but what Jesus is pointing to here is a practice that was common. I mentioned earlier that when a shepherd had to go out into the open and they had to have these makeshift shelters, there weren't doors to these shelters. It was just this big kind of fence, and they would have to kind of, there was an opening, and they would actually have to create the door, but they would create the door by being the door. The shepherd would lay down in the entrance. Listen, he would lay down in the entrance, and he himself would be the door. He would be the guard to the shelter. That's what Jesus is saying here. In other words, he's saying, you have to pass through me to leave the shelter, and you have to pass through me to get into this shelter. So think about what that is saying. First, it's saying that he guards us from ourselves. He guards us from our foolishness to wander. And oh, do we need it. Prone to wonder, Lord, I feel it. Prone to leave the God I love. It's in every single one of us. But not only guards us from ourselves, but he guards us from intruders, from ravenous wolves. Notice verse 12. Jesus contrasts himself to a hired hand. The hired hand runs when he sees danger. But what does Jesus do? He stays put. He defends us. All danger in our life must meet him first, must come through him first. So think about all this. Wherever he leads you, he goes as your protector and your defender. If Jesus leads you into suffering and hardship, you're never alone there. If he leads you into the valley of shadow of death, you are to fear no evil, for he is there with you. His rod and his staff, he says, will comfort you. And he never leads you to abandon you, as what false shepherds do. He's not a false shepherd. He is a true shepherd. He is the good shepherd, the shepherd of our souls. And whatever he's leading you through, it is ultimately into greener pastures. So we have to follow him when he calls, but lastly, we must also receive from him what he gives. And I'll be quick here. You need to receive from him what he gives. In verse 10, Jesus says, the thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy, but I came that they may have life and they may have it abundantly. Abundant life. That is what Jesus came to give us. But listen, he's not talking about a life of material abundance or a life free from hardship or your best life now. But he's talking about life lived under the gentle and just rule of his kingly shepherding within his kingdom flock. And do you know what that life is? Do you know what that life boils down to? Abundant life is that life that is lived in full and open and honest and transparent communion with the God who created you. It is finally being you with the God who created you. It is being able to stand before the face of God with no shame and no guilt and no anxiety and there being no question whatsoever about what really matters in life. It's accepting the fact that knowing God and being known by God is true life, period. That is abundant life. But that abundant life is lived among other sheep. Knowing God incorporates you into rich and reciprocating fellowship with others who know God. Jesus says in verse 16, there is one flock and there is one shepherd. There is one flock and there is one shepherd. And do you realize what this is? This is everything you long for. This is everything we long for. Communion with God. Communion with the God who made us and community with others who know the same God, and it's never ending. It is communion and community wrapped up in one, and it is never ending. It's the best night you've ever had with the people you love, where the conversation is just amazing, it's life-giving, it's centered around God, it's centered around the things that matter. You don't want it to stop. He's the center of everything, and everyone's included. It's transparent, it's honest. It's a thing that you just know, like, this is, there's no place I'd rather be. Some of us maybe don't have that, and we long for that. Some of us have had that, and we know that's what we're created for. That is what Jesus is saying here, is abundant life. And if you've had it here, and you long for it here, once you get it in full, it never ends. It just keeps going. That is abundant life. But listen, the only way you can receive that life is by passing through death. Sheep in the Old Testament were slaughtered. Under the sacrificial system of the Old Covenant, sheep were slaughtered in the place of people. And it was the way for people to pass into the life that God wanted to give them. And in passing through death, they were receiving life. They were receiving forgiveness. As forgiveness always requires, when someone hurts you, you can either forgive them and absorb the pain or choose not to forgive them and you'll inflict the pain. There are only two options. This is what God has always desired to do, right? With the sacrificial system. To find a way for you not to absorb the pain. To find a way for his people not to absorb the pain, not to absorb the punishment. He was providing a way to forgive for all the times his people hurt him, for all the times his people kicked at him, all the times his people spit in his face and ignored him and rejected him. God desired to make provision for his people's foolishness because he loved them. Because he deeply loved them. He gave them the system, the sacrificial system, because he loved them. But listen, in the new covenant, in Jesus, by the grace of God, it is no longer the blood of sheep that God requires, because the blood of the shepherd has been shed. The shepherd becomes the sheep. The shepherd gets involved in the pain. The shepherd absorbs the pain. The shepherd puts himself in the place that you are supposed to be. and takes it within himself. Do you realize what that means? It means once and for all, he is putting an end to this. And once for all, he is opening this up to the world, not to just his people Israel, but to the world. And he's saying, I'm taking it all on me now because I want to forgive everyone. I want this life to go to everyone. The shepherd becomes the sheep. The shepherd tastes death so that the sheep might have life. Verse 11, I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. Verse 15, I lay down my life for the sheep. Verse 17, for this reason the Father loves me because I lay down my life that I may take it up again. Verse 18, no one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. Listen, Jesus' death was not a tragedy. It was not ill fate. It was not forced. No, God himself, he willingly and he freely and he graciously chose to enter and to die in your place, to take the pain, to take the punishment. You have kicked at him. You have spit at him. You have rejected him. You have ignored him. And what does he do? He seeks you. He is the shepherd who leaves the 99 to find the one. You are that one. Every single one of us at some point has been that one sheep that has needed to be sought. And the shepherd has sought you, and he has come after you, and even for that one, he would say, I am willing to lay down my life, even for that one. What other shepherd in your life does that? What shepherd in your life would do that? This is how we know Jesus is worth following. This is how we know Jesus is the good shepherd. From the book Gates of Fire, which is a novel about the Battle of Thermopylae, which is about the 300 Spartans who stood against the invading millions of the Persian army. The writer, Stephen Pressfield, says this in The Gates of Fire. He writes this to describe a king, a true leader. He says, I will tell his majesty what a king is. A king does not abide within his tent while his men bleed and die upon the field. A king does not dine while his men go hungry, nor sleep when they stand at watch upon the wall. A king does not command his men's loyalty through fear, nor purchase it with gold. He earns their love by the sweat of his own back and the pains he endures for their sake. That which comprises the harshest burden, a king lifts first and sets down last. A king does not require service of those he leads, but provides it to them. He serves them, not they him. Friends, Jesus is the shepherd king who has come to serve you, who has come to seek you, who has come to lay down his life for you. He knows us completely. He guides us. He guards us lovingly. But ultimately, it's because he lays down his life sacrificially that we know he is the true and good shepherd. But listen, he is not a dead shepherd. He didn't just go and die, but he had the authority to take it up again. He had the charge to take it up again. He is the risen Christ. He triumphs through defeat. He lays down his life, but the Father has given him charge to take it up again. The shepherding you long for, the shepherding you need, Jesus gives. The shepherd you long for, the shepherd you need, Jesus is right now. And as verse 16 says, he is gathering a flock from all over the world, from Baghdad and Cairo and London and Paris and Moscow and Beijing, San Francisco, Vancouver, New Delhi, Sydney, to Issaquah, Washington. Do you really believe that Jesus is your shepherd? Do you need a shepherd? Are you listening to his voice? If you are, why would you listen to any other? Let's pray. Father, give us ears that are attuned to your voice that speaks through your Son by your Spirit. Speak over all the voices in our lives that we may follow your Son into abundant life. In his name we pray, amen.